This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got a lot more football to get to. Thanks for joining us as we continue on a Monday morning on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's, please, when you do that. But I do want to touch on college football for a second. So on Saturday, I went to go visit my daughter at her college at the University of North Alabama, which is located in Florence, but it's still in the state of Alabama. And then afterwards, we kind of went to dinner with a couple of families, and we were in a restaurant where Alabama and LSU was playing. And boy, Alabama was looking great. Now, this was a team that lost to Texas early in the season, and Jalen Milroe, the quarterback, got benched because of his performance against the Longhorns. We know that college football is going to change. I think I really only have one more year of this to remind people of. Because I think when it goes to 12, the better teams are going to find a way to get in. Now, depending on the structure, right? I mean, a lot of these commissioners are kind of wanting to make sure that most of their teams can get into the 12-team playoffs. So they don't want room for weaker conferences or weaker teams because of some automatic berth. But they really do want to make sure that the 12 teams feature the best of the best. And if it means four SEC teams, that's what they're fighting for. Or four ACC teams or Big Ten teams, that's what they want to fight for. We'll see exactly what will play out next season when there's 12 teams. So I think this is my last year to say this. And that is this. If you're going to lose in college football, you better lose early. If you're going to lose one game, lose it early. It's always been the case that people have sort of recency bias in their minds. No matter what you try to do to avoid it, you kind of can't help yourself. A team that responds to a loss with a great run after that loss is way more impressive than a team that plays well, may not play well but still win, may not play well and still win again, then plays well but then loses. The losses late in the season have impacted college football more than anything in terms of determining the national championship. We have seen it time and time again. The Florida Gators won a national title, but they lost to Ole Miss at home. And why? Because they ran the table and ran the table really, really well. It helps when your opponents ahead of you in the standings start losing late and you are building up momentum. And I bring this up because when you look at the current AP poll, and we're going to go with the AP poll because that's the recent thing that is out. The committee poll is going to come out, and we know that they're different. Ohio State is number one, not number three. Georgia's number two, not number one. So we know that the committee's poll coming out on Tuesday will be different. But let's just go with the AP poll as a guide here for a second. Right now, there are five undefeated teams in college football, and there are five undefeated teams in college football with four spots for this year. Right now, if you look at it, the undefeated teams are Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, and Washington. Well, we know now that there will not be five undefeated teams when the season is over, when it's all said and done, because Michigan and Ohio State are going to play each other. But it does raise the question, well, what if a one-loss team eliminates one of these teams ahead of time? Washington's got a very tough schedule ahead of them. They've already beaten Oregon. But the team really to pay attention to now is, unfortunately, if you see it in the lens of, my God, can't get rid of them, that's Alabama. Alabama has a chance to knock out Georgia in the SEC title game because their game against LSU is enough now to put them in Atlanta. And if they knock off Georgia, Alabama is going to the playoff. A one-loss SEC champion is going to the playoff. It doesn't feel like Alabama is Alabama, right? And this goes back to something I said earlier. Well, why not? How come Alabama doesn't feel like Alabama? Well, for one, the Alabama quarterbacks have never been the real instrument as to why they were winning games. They were efficient. They were good. They were mature. They understood the game. They were smart. All of those things. But they weren't J.J. McCarthy. They weren't Michael Penix Jr. They weren't Robert Griffin III. Guys that would really elevate their team to an unbelievable level playing the quarterback position. They weren't Johnny Manziel, right? They were smart quarterbacks, but the Alabama teams was always built around speed players and phenomenal defense. So, again, how come? They lost to Texas, a very good football team in week two. And since that moment, they have beaten Ole Miss. You know, they barely beat Texas A&M, and they barely beat Arkansas. But they beat Tennessee, a ranked team, by 14 points after being shutting them out in the second half. And they pretty much throttled LSU once Jaden Daniels was out of the game. I know it became a little bit differently, but they put up 42 on LSU and won that pretty comfortably. But why? Why are we not getting the feeling of Alabama? And this was rightly deserved. They weren't high up in the rankings despite the loss. Other Alabama teams in the past were able to survive a midseason loss, whether it was to Texas A&M, whether it was to Ole Miss when Hugh Freeze was the coach of the program. They were able to survive these losses. They survived one loss one year. They survived a loss to South Carolina because they were so good and they were so talented. They would remain up. And when, as you get closer up, especially in the old BCS days, you could get your way in watching the chaos ensue below you and then elevating you with wins and then a conference championship. This year's Alabama team doesn't feel like Alabama because they dropped to double digits in the rankings after losing and then climbed their way up to like ninth. At one point, they were 11th. Right? So when you fall that far and you feel like there are just other teams that are just better, then you fall, and nobody's really paying attention to teams like that in the rankings. It's a little early. We haven't seen what the playoff committee does. Like, it's September. It's early October. Who really cares? We don't really know yet. Conference schedules haven't really heated up yet. And then when conference schedules did heat up, yeah, they weren't that impressive against Arkansas. They weren't that impressive against Texas A&M. So they were worthy of a 10 or a 9 or an 11, whatever they were. And it's really hard to see them in any other light because other Alabama teams were so good that even if they lost in a midseason game, even if they lost at home, they wouldn't fall back down that far and they could rise back up again. But it is hard to rise back up again when we are in early November and there are five undefeated teams. The team that beat you is ahead of you. There are a couple of other teams with one losses that are ahead of you. And it's hard to see them in any other light than, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, they're all right. Yeah, they're all right. They're pretty good. But don't sleep on them because one day you're going to wake up and you're going to wonder how in God's name did they get in the playoff? Because if you're not paying attention, they're going to run the rest of their schedule. They're going to go to Atlanta. And if they beat Georgia without Brock Bowers, a Georgia team that's lost All-American tight end, playing good, by the way, playing good without him, which is surprising, they're going to be in the playoff. Because an SEC one-loss champion is not going to get kicked out of this playoff. But it would stink for Georgia, where their only loss is on the largest stage the conference could provide. Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, for all of the marbles. Georgia didn't lose at home to a non-conference opponent, right? Georgia didn't need to work their way back up. This is where Greg Sankey would scream to the high heavens that the SEC deserved two teams. That's what you'd want. Sell, sell, sell. Get that committee to buy into your conference. And they might do it. They might do it. But the reality of it is that that's where we stand with Alabama. Even when you're kicked down and out and you feel like, it's just not the same. Remember, that loss to Texas wasn't a conference game. They still had a full slate of SEC games, but the quarterback didn't play well. Then he got benched. Then he came back. When was an Alabama quarterback benched for a loss? When was A.J. McCarron or Mac Jones or you know any of the other quarterbacks back in the day? The Tua Tagovailoa, the Bryce Youngs, Greg McElroy, like these other quarterbacks that have led this team to success. When were they ever benched after a bad game where people really, really didn't believe in them? And the conversation was, is this guy capable of winning a championship? Oh, yeah, they benched Jalen Hurts in the fourth quarter of that national championship game for Tua, the freshman who came in and won it for them. But never has the conversation about the Alabama quarterback been so dire for Milroe as it was after that Texas loss. And that's where they are. So I'm just telling you, it's better, again, it's better to lose. Now, again, with 12 teams, I might have to retire that phrase because I don't think it's going to be apropos. I tell you, the one thing about the 12-team playoff is we are going to, like, if you look at the rankings right now, okay, what we would be having late conversations about would be the viability of a Tennessee, Oklahoma State, Missouri, Utah, those kind of teams. By the way, speaking of Oklahoma State, congratulations on winning that game against Oklahoma. I have this friend I know I told you about. He hits me up for, like, picks, college football picks.
Yeah.
And I tell him, I'm like, I just spreads and lines, I don't really do good, but I can give you my feelings. And I said, I had a really good feeling about Oklahoma State. And I said, Oklahoma State wants this so badly because they need to, they're good. They're good enough to beat Oklahoma. And this is kicking Oklahoma on their way out of the conference. And I tell you, this is the one phrase that was put on this win for Oklahoma State was, they now own Bedlam for eternity. Until this rivalry comes back, and you never know, it might, but I doubt it. I doubt it in the near future anyway.
Well, I just look at Texas A&M, right?
That's right. That's right. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are not destined to be playing each other in a non-conference game. But the reality of it is now Oklahoma has that final Bedlam game. They own it for the rest. They own it for the rest of eternity. And it was a good win. It was a good win. And for them to play the Taylor Swift song at the end of that, right? We're never going to get back together. Great stuff. That's funny. It's cute. Good for them, though. Good for that Oklahoma State team to represent the conference and represent the conference strong. Because I'll tell you this, the Red River rivalry game between Oklahoma and Texas, if it was said once, it was said 1,000 times that this thing would belong to the SEC. Bedlam was Big 12s until Oklahoma decided to go to the SEC, and Oklahoma won it for the conference.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb. Loaded football weekend. But we got some good and we got some bad and we got some dumb to dive into. All right, what is the good of the day?
The good of the day. Tony, do you remember a few weeks ago we were talking about how it's a kicker's world?
It is a kicker's world,
you
yeah.
You know, they were, I mean, we were just like, what game was it where they were just kicking field goals all games?
It was like a bunch of them, yeah.
Bills and somebody, right? All they did was just kick field goals all day long. And you and I were making jokes and making fun of the fact that kickers might be the next one up to demand high contracts.
Yeah. If you're going to use me, you might as well pay me. Yeah, exactly.
Well, a little-known fourth-string running back named Dare Ogunbowale just set that idea back a few years.
Oh, okay.
He is the backup, like I said, fourth-string running back for the Texans, Houston Texans. And on Sunday, Kyme Fairburn, who the normal kicker, went down with a quad injury sometime in the first half. Instead of calling on the punter, they called on Dare Ogunbowale to finish up duties. He handled all the kickoffs in the second half. D'Amico Ryans went for two most of the time after scoring a touchdown, all except this once right here.
Ogunbowale, 7-year NFL veteran, normally a running back. The field goal attempt is good. Houston leads. Smiles for everybody inside the stadium.
So there you have it. Ogunbowale put the Texans up, I think it was 33-30 at that point.
Now, that is, did the, that sounded like Ian Eagle on the call. So Ian Eagle and CBS, how much prep information did they get about that possible scenario?
Maybe that moment, what, you got a whole third quarter and part of a fourth?
Like, when they met with D'Amico Ryans, they go, hey, just in case Fairburn goes out, what do you guys do? Do you guys go with the punter? Or do you have, like, a fourth pick draft guy? I mean, fourth guy on the depth chart running back that can kick? Like, how much did Ian Eagle know about the background of this guy as a kicker? Maybe he did it in school. I have no idea. What made him the kicker? Do we know?
No.
Is there a background story at the end of the game?
Well, I got one for you. I mean, he was a walk-on at the University of Wisconsin as a defensive back, switched to running back. But in high school, I believe he went to, like, Marquette High School. He did play football, soccer, basketball, and track at the high school.
Okay, so
he does have a soccer player background.
But that doesn't mean you can kick a football.
No, it does not. I don't know if he's ever practiced on the side.
I'm sure if I went through a lot of people, someone would go, I played soccer too. I mean, I did a little soccer on the side too, whatever. But, like, I'm curious. Is like, somehow, some way, this got to D'Amico Ryans that this kid could kick. Like, you're not going to have every player on the team try to kick field goals just to see who your emergency kicker would be.
Yeah. Well,
he must have said, listen, I've done this. I'd like to show you I could do it. If you ever need a guy to kick, I know it's a rare possibility, but I actually can put it through the uprights. And they worked him out, and he could kick some field goals.
Ogunbowale did say he last kicked a field goal in a game in high school.
Okay.
And then he also said, I was always kind of the unwritten emergency kicker, but nothing ever came up that I needed to be out there kicking. So he's never practiced. He hasn't practiced.
Right.
So the last time he probably really kicked a ball outside of just fooling around.
But again,
around.
I'm not trying to be Sherlock Holmes here. There's no way D'Amico Ryans randomly grabbed this guy and sent him out to kick a field goal without any knowledge of this. Somehow he knew that this guy could do it, and he did it. He must have done it for him in practice.
Yeah.
There's no way he went, anybody want to go out there? And the guy raised his hand and he just went, go ahead. Like, I got a thing at somewhere, like maybe at a meeting or something, or, hey, coach, can I see you for 2 seconds? I just want to let you know I can kick.
To maybe because he's a four-string running back still trying to make the team.
Right.
And
he's
just maybe he went to that and said,
roster.
Hey, listen, just in case you ever need me.
Yeah. And then they said, all right, let's go pop some through the uprights and see. And they did. Because that's too big of a moment.
Especially that one where it's 30-30.
Right? Was that
30-30
exactly.
In the fourth quarter? And
You can't just go, I don't even know what this might be. Speaking of which, I got to tell you a funny thing. They did one of those field goal things at the North Alabama game on Saturday.
I was out with
my daughter. And they sent a kid out there, and his buddies were all cheering him, and the cheerleaders were all cheering for him and whatnot. And he went to kick that thing. That thing didn't even get off the ground.
Well, real quick, remember on Friday I brought up the Texas State kick?
Yeah, did they give that away?
They did give it away. Here's the deal, though. So the original spot was 35 yards. Basically,
right. You
know, you're kicking a field goal. The first three guys that they picked at random couldn't even get it off the ground.
Yeah.
So then they said, hey, we are determined to get this going. And, you know, said, hey, you got an unlimited amount of people after the game. You want to line up and try to get free tuition. Go ahead. What they didn't say was that they were moving it. If it was so embarrassing, they were going to move it up. So it went
that's unfair.
So it went from 35 yards to 23 yards. The first guy up nailed it.
That's unfair. That's
so
unfair.
Stay tuned. We may have controversy in Texas State.
You're better off saying, no, we're done. We're not going to be here all night. No one's getting the award. It was unfair for people to try to kick a 35er and then they moved it up to a 23er.
Right.
I agree. That's too big of a prize to have people in the back of the line benefit from that. But everyone laughed, and I said, you know, guys, this is harder than you think.
It is.
it is not like that. But yeah, good for him. But you know what? Good for him to be smart enough to have made it clear to somebody in the Houston organization that he could do this.
Do you think he was like Randy Quaid? I can kick.
I can, yeah, right? Raise his hand.
I've kicked a field goal.
Yeah. Because who thinks about where your emergency kicker is going to be?
And why isn't it the punter?
It's usually your
punter. Yeah, why?
If it's not your punter, you're screwed. Right?
Yeah. I mean, Ogunbowale. I thank God. I feel bad. Probably not going to have to learn his name, but Ogunbowale. I forgot what I was going to say because I was so concentrating on the guy's name.
All right, well, I'll say it. So here's kickoffs are one thing. You can just get a guy to just go, hey, boot the hell out of it. If we're down a kicker and the punter can't do it, then fine. But then we're going for two on everything, and we're not going for field goals.
Yeah, and that's what they did.
We're entirely taking that out of the game. So we're going for it on fourth down instead of kicking field goals because we're down a kicker. But then they went with this guy, and the guy said, you know what? I think I've done this before. I can do it. And they went, yeah, we trust you late in the game in a situation. Go out there and do it, my man.
Yeah.
Go out there and get it.
No, I remember what I was going to say. He's the first position player to kick a field goal since Wes Welker.
I remember that. I remember Wes Welker kicking.
So 2004. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, you and I are making the point. It's not a common thing.
No. You don't. Yeah. So good for him. Good for him for that. All right, what is the bad, and we'll probably have to carry it over.
The bad that I actually have two, so we can do one real quick, and then if we want, we can bring up the next one in the next segment. But the first one is the San Jose Sharks just might be the worst team in NHL history right now.
Is this the 10-0 score that, or something like that, 10-something score that they gave up the other night?
It's bigger than that, Tony. It's back-to-back games. So Thursday, they allowed the Canucks to win 10-1, and then they followed that up on Saturday, losing to the Penguins 10-2.
How is that happening?
Right.
Like, that is not supposed to happen. Like, you are supposed to have two quality goaltenders. If one pukes on himself, that's fine. But the second guy is not supposed to puke on himself. Was it the same goalie? And if it is the same goalie, he needs to be an accountant.
Exactly. I mean, maybe pull that accountant, right? Remember the third emergency goalie that just comes to the games?
But you would call up your guy from the minor leagues if you needed a goalie after the first 10-1 game.
They've lost 11 straight.
Oh, they are terrible.
And they're right now on the season, it's 11 games they've played so far. So they've lost 11 straight. They are 0-10-1.
All right, so the goaltenders...
And the one is an overtime loss, so...
So they have a goaltender named Mackenzie Blackwood. I'm looking that up. And then they have another one named Kaapo Kanoinen. He's from Finland. Okay, so both of those guys were in the net in the 10-1 loss to the Canucks. So now I'm going to look up to see if those same clowns were in net for their 10-2 loss to Pittsburgh. So here we go. And the Penguins scored 5 goals in the second period. And now Blackwood was in net. But then they had another guy named Magnus Corona.
Oh, my God.
Corona. He's from Sweden, too. So we had 3 goaltenders in 2 games give up 20 goals in an NHL hockey game.
What's
an NHL hockey season?
What's Dario Ugambwale doing?
Yeah, right. He could probably be in net for the Sharks.
I mean, he'd probably be better.
He could probably be like, hey, I did a little goalie.
He's from Wisconsin. I'm guaranteed he's ice skated.
Jeez. Man, that's... That's like all-star hockey.
That's NHL 94 hockey.
Right, that's very much that's, so.
You have Jeremy Roenick on your team, and you're just scoring at will.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
video game numbers.
I mean, 10-1. I mean, a team just scoring 10 goals by itself is amazing to me.
They haven't won a game all season.
No, they haven't.
10-1.
They have an overtime loss. That's the one. But they're 0-11 to start the season.
And they're allowing... Well, they're allowing nearly 5 goals per game, 4.91. They're only scoring 1. They're averaging 1.09 goals per game. That's
oh,
all.
Oh, boy.
Good, the bad, that I'm continuing next. It's Wake Up Call, Sportsman Brady. That's all.
This is Wake Up Call. Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, tonight, Monday Night Football, you got the Chargers and the Jets, but we're continuing with the good, the bad, and the dumb with the second bad of the day, which I hope is not tonight for your Chargers against the 3 straight winning Jets.
No, they're going to lose.
Yeah, well.
It's the Jets. This is the game that the Chargers do not play well in at all, ever. And I have no idea why.
We shall see tonight. What is the bad of the day?
The second bad of the day. Okay. Let me preface it this way. I like the idea.
Okay.
Okay, I really like the idea. Ryan Murphy is coming out with his first installment of a new American Story series.
Who's Ryan Murphy?
Ryan Murphy. He's the guy behind all the American stories, like American Horror Story. He made the American story about the O.J. Simpson trial.
Got it. Okay.
Remember the one that...
O.J. Made in America?
No, not the
documentary. Oh, no, the one with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeah, and John Travolta and everything. So he's coming out with a new one called American Sports Story.
Okay.
And so there's going to be a new anthology. We should get a couple of these. I mean, that O.J. one was American Crime Story, blah, blah, blah. So this is American Sports Story. The first installment that he's centering around, and this is where it's a little bad. I don't know if we should be celebrating it, but the first installment is centered around Aaron Hernandez.
He did one with O.J. Simpson, and it wasn't to pump up O.J. Simpson. Is it because it's an interesting story, and it's an interesting.
I guess, yeah.
Like, I mean, I think you might be reading these as celebratory documentary things, but instead they may be just informative.
I mean, it's maybe going the informative route.
Yeah, most 30 for 30s are not, this guy is so awesome, let's just celebrate him for 2 hours.
Right, but this isn't a documentary.
But I know, but it's based on a real story.
Right.
So whether you act it out or you play it out, he's not making Aaron Hernandez a superhero that fights crime.
No.
He's telling the Aaron Hernandez story. Whether you act it out or you have it, it's a documentary in nature. You're taking a true story and putting it on the screen and telling the story. Whether you use actors or you use clips with voiceovers, you're kind of doing the same thing.
Right. Now, the actor that has been touted for this is Josh Andres Rivera. I can't remember the lead character's name in Maria, Steven Spielberg's Maria.
Because I wonder if people are more or less – but I wonder if people more or less are like – hey, Aaron Hernandez, this is a bizarre story. How did the guy go from – I mean, he was a major part of the Florida Gators football team that won national championships. He was on the New England Patriots and won Super Bowls. How in the world did this guy murder people, like murder a guy? How did this happen? Like where did it – how did no one see this? How did no one notice this? How did he fall into this life where his answer to a situation was to take a guy and execute him? So I'm curious about that. Like I saw the Aaron Hernandez Netflix documentary. I thought it was kind of fascinating. I was upset that Swamp Kings didn't mention Aaron Hernandez at all.
True.
So unless again his body of work is, but I'll be honest with you, celebrating sports stuff is nonsense. Like you got to have in order to do those things. There's got to be a side story, a controversial story.
And I think, it's centered on his life, on Aaron Hernandez.
Have you ever watched those Sports Illustrated videos of a championship season?
Oh, yeah.
They're dumb.
Yeah.
They're not for us. They're for the fan. Mm-hmm. So they can watch all the awesome things that happened over and over again. And all the people talking about, and then we lost game two. And boy, we had to rally around each other. Oh, good. Yay. And then they won game three. Most of the 30 for 30s you want is because somebody goes, and then we screwed up. Like, and then you go, oh, okay, that's what I want. So maybe, just maybe, that this is.
And that's what I mean. Maybe it may be good. I don't know.
I think it'll be good. I think those stories are important. I think those, like, how in the world, again, did we get caught up in Aaron Hernandez that we totally missed out on a psychopathic nature that made him a murderer? And then what happened to him in prison? Like, why did he kill himself?
Yeah.
You know? Like stuff like that. So.
Well, and they also have another actor, Patrick Schwarzenegger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you've heard of him.
I think, I've heard of his dad, or his grandfather, whoever it is.
I think it's his dad.
Okay.
But he has been touted to star as Tim Tebow.
Oh, okay. So this is getting,
I think they're going through the entire part, the Florida. Maybe you start to see some of the demons rise in Florida, then to the Patriots, and
would you like to be
so
Tim
on and
Tebow?
So forth.
The guy playing you in a movie is the son of one of the most impressive bodybuilders in the history of the Mr. Universe contest. I might be over-exaggerating that, but...
Well, I think he's the most famous out of any, because I couldn't name another...
I couldn't name anybody else.
Mr. Universe bodybuilder.
Exactly. That's pretty good. It's not Brad Pitt playing me as Billy Bean.
No.
But, I mean, it's still pretty decent. It's pretty awesome. If Brad Pitt plays you in a movie, even if he has to wear some makeup, that's pretty impressive. But, yeah, that's awesome for Tebow.
So, no timeline on when it's going to be released yet because they're still got to wait for the SAG
after strike to end. I thought the OJ thing was good.
I did, too. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But that's
the SAG after – that's not done yet?
No, the writer strike is.
Okay, so what's the other part?
The SAG after is the actors.
Actors are on strike?
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. This was a dual strike?
There was two strikes going on at once.
I did not know that because I felt like the actors were like – hey, writers have got to get paid. I'm here to support the writers. The writers are the bread and butter of what they never once went. Yeah, I'm online for me too. I'm doing it for me as well.
No, they're in there.
So how come they got one and not the other?
Well, I guess they were able to figure out with writers with
AI. Is that confusing?
With AI, but is everything still centered
around? No. How did the writers get a deal and the actors didn't get a deal?
Good question.
Like, how did they go, well, we'll work on the actors later, but the writers who will write for no one.
We'll get there eventually.
Right? At least, like, the actors you think you would lock in first, you're like, well, we could get AI to write. But if you bring in the writers and they go back to work and they go, oh, great, I got a – hey, Skipper, I got two movies in the can. Yeah, you're going to have to hold on to those because we have no one that can play them.
We've entered – I just had to look it up real quick. We're in 114 days of the strike going on.
Oh.
That no one really knew was going on.
Nobody seems to care about.
But one of the many sticking points still remain around the use of AI, especially when it comes to the likeness and the replacement of human extras with digital ones.
Okay.
Why is that a thing?
I don't know. All right, what is the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. We got to go back to Frankfurt for this one.
Oh, okay. What happened in Frankfurt? Because it seemed like everything was awesome.
Everything was great, but a couple got engaged on the sideline. I think it was just before the game or just after the game, right? They got engaged on the sideline. She said yes. But the guy was so excited, he immediately hugged the Chiefs mascot first before hugging his new fiance.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's not going to be lived down, is it?
That's not going to be good. Unless that's a tradition in Germany to hug mascots after you propose. Could that be a case? Yeah. Like maybe that's maybe they do it differently.
Maybe.
You need a friend in like a raccoon outfit or something when you propose to your fiance.
Is that what the Chiefs mascot is?
I kind of think it is. I don't know exactly what it is. Is it a wolf?
No, because remember the wolf.
Is it Casey Wolf?
Wasn't the wolf guy? Didn't he get in trouble?
The guy in the thing might got in trouble, but don't they keep it? It looks like the same mascot.
But that was a fan. But that was a fan who dressed up. This is a mascot.
It's Casey Wolf.
Casey, so he's a wolf.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's a weird looking wolf. I mean,
were you thinking that the wolf got in trouble and they just abandoned that mascot and went with something else?
No. The guy who got in trouble, that wasn't the official mascot. He was just a fan.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
There was a fan who always came to the games dressed up as a wolf.
Okay, well, that's right.
And he got in trouble with the law.
Okay, that's fine.
Kansas City has a mascot that has a extremely large belly. It shapes
and
jiggles.
I think that's a wolf.
You think that's a wolf too? Okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can understand what Greedy is compared quicker than I can the KC mascot.
That's true, because he does look like he does look raccoonish.
Yeah. When you said raccoon, I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, maybe they do it differently.
Maybe it's a raccoon and a wolf that got together.
Was she mad? Was she visibly upset at this action?
You know what? When you watch the video, it's quick, right? It's a quick video, and I watched it. She looks taken aback, but it's okay. It's like, oh, yeah, you just got a ring in your hand, and, you know, the hands over the mouth type of thing. But he immediately turns and hugs the mascot, and then he's like, it looked like a light bulb went off in his head. Like, oh, I should hug her real quick.
Oh, yeah, she got to hug her.
But she did look like. There was that half a second like, well, what are you doing?
Good point. Be careful. This is destined to fail now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, see, good job, people in Germany, for proposing at the sideline of a football game. Like I was saying earlier, they loved the Chiefs.
You know what? You knew it immediately during that national anthem, didn't you?
When they chanted home of the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Holy mackerel.
It could have been a home. I mean, it was their home game.
That was a home game for the Chiefs. They booed the Dolphins when they came out on the field. They booed them.
But you know what? I got to say this. The first thing that went through my mind when I was watching that stadium looked good.
That did look good.
That was an
old stadium. They made it look sharp.
That was nice. And it was just, my only complaint, I guess, with the NFL Network, I wanted more outside stadium shots.
Yeah.
Because I was looking around and like, Frankfurt looks like a cool, cool town.
Yeah, it was. I mean, listen, they've got nothing but reviews from every reporter that's been out there this week, like last week. Everybody said it was one of the killer assignments, that it was absolutely amazing. Frankfurt did the NFL well. And again, it makes them international crazy. They leave there going, oh, my God, we can't. Well, some of them had to stay for the Patriots and the Colts game. But those who were like, oh, my God, we got to do this again. We got to do this more. Yeah, that's what happens.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again, a full weekend of football, college football that mattered. You had some NFL games. Some of the games really mattered. Some of the games really popped with some, you know, eye-opening moments. C.J. Stroud, 5 touchdowns for the Texans. That was just fantastic. And then Josh Dobbs' story is
backyard
great.
Backyard football. That's all
backyard
I can think
football,
about.
It's great.
Told you, before the show, I said my favorite video I think from the weekend was him going over his cadence with the offensive line.
Yeah, that's right, on the sideline. Like, we haven't worked on this all week since I just got here.
Now
I'm put into mode.
He didn't know his wide receivers' names.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just proved that, I guess, the NFL quarterback position isn't rocket scientist.
I do want to talk about one team that's bad. And so you've heard me say this a lot, which is it's a phrase I use a lot in these situations, and it's called protecting the field. And it's a term that's used in golf. And basically what it means is if Ron and I are playing in a PGA Tour event, or any golf tournament for that matter, but a PGA Tour event, and let's say Ron is 9 under par and he's a leader and he's leading by one, and let's say I'm his playing partner and I'm 3 over and I'm out of it. I'm not going to win. I'm probably going to miss the cut. But let's say on the hole 15, I see Ron's ball move and Ron doesn't put it back. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm 12 shots out. It doesn't benefit me. I don't care. But I have to call it on him because I have to protect the field. And what that means is that there are guys behind me or in front of me. They're all competing in this tournament fair and square. I see something that's a breach of the rules. I've got to call it. And the reason I bring this up is because this is one of the reasons why commissioners do not like tanking, even if they understand the process. Even if they understand, for example, in the NBA, that teams are not going to play their best lineup and they're going to sit guys out because they want more ping pong balls in the lottery because there may be a Victor Wembanyama there, right? The NFL, it's really hard to tank. You've heard us say this over and over again. It's really hard because players don't have guaranteed contracts. They may have guaranteed money, but they don't have guaranteed jobs. And so what you can't afford as a player is to purposely do things to help your team lose because it shows up on tape. And word gets out quickly. And believe me, if you're a second-string guy and you think that team is going to protect you because you did the right thing by them, you're mistaken and they know it. Every game you go out there, you got to play as hard as you can. But what you can do as an organization is you can allow your team to suffer some deficiencies just enough so that they can't win, so you can better yourself, which is the only explanation I can give for the Arizona Cardinals. Because we had Russell Baxter on last hour, and he said something rather interesting. You know, the Cardinals lost a lot of games. They're 1-7, and they lost a lot of games with Josh Dobbs. But they gave themselves fighting chances in a lot of games. They just didn't come out on top. Whether it was the game against the Giants, in which they had a big lead at halftime and kind of fell apart in the end, or opening up the season at Washington, where they were fighting that one to the wire, or beating the Cowboys, or taking a fight to the Baltimore Ravens last week, where they were an onside kick away from making a move to try to tie a game. When they had Josh Dobbs, they had a guy that was going out there to try to win because Dobbs knows the deal, right? Dobbs knows he's a guy that's going to be bouncing around from team to team to team to team probably his whole career and making pretty good money doing it. Right? But there were players around him. Well, what did the Arizona Cardinals do? There was a belief that Kyler Murray was coming back from this injury. So they trade Dobbs for Clayton Tune, and they got picks out of the deal. They're stocking picks, and they've got a lot of them. But then they went and played Cleveland, and they got shut out, which is really, really hard to do if you're fighting in an NFL game. It's really hard to get shut out. You're bound to get 3 points at some point. But they got shut out. But to make matters worse, they got 58 yards of total offense. 58. They had 7 first downs. They turned the ball over 3 times. Now, this is not on the players purposely trying to lose to Cleveland. But the Cardinals, by not giving the team the kind of team that just can be somewhat competitive. Now, if they had Josh Dobbs on that team, could they have gone to Cleveland and won? Probably not. But here's the thing. The reason why I bring up the term protecting the field is because simplest terms, if you have a team, and it doesn't matter what team, it can be in the NBA, it can be in the NFL, it can be any of these teams where the purpose is to just get out with losses so it betters your chances for the future, you're doing a disservice to the competitiveness of the overall goal, the overall league. If I get Arizona playing their very, very best and they give me a fight and I turn the ball over at the wrong time and they escape with a victory, but the guy I'm competing for in a playoff gets we've traded everybody and no one here can play football. If that's the organization puts out against them, then they've unleveled the playing field. That they get a win against a team that's not even trying, or at least put in a position to not be successful. And I got the dogfight team that's battling me tooth and nail and I made a mistake. Right? That's why commissioners lose their minds with this. That's why commissioners will punish you if they can find some way, shape, or form that you didn't put the best possible team out. And it's never on the players. It's always on coaching staffs and owners and general managers who are behind all of this. Now, I know the Browns' defense is pretty good, but they're not 58 yards good. This was a two-way street. 58 yards in an NFL game, please. Clayton Tune. Like, this is what we talk about in this crazy league all the time. It really is. I'm serious. Look at the announcing booths. Look at the announcing booths. Find guys on these announcing booths that can't play in the NFL, that could not play in the NFL. Go watch Fox Sports on a college football Saturday. You know who's on their bench? Now, these guys might be too old, but they've been out of the league a long time. Matt Leinart and Brady Quinn. Remember those guys? First-round picks? Remember the can't be in the league. Didn't last. Out in their 20s. Clayton Tune gets to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? Never heard of him. We were all loving Tyson Bagent. How long did that last before he started chucking interceptions like he was giving them away like Halloween candy? Like, this is what this league is now? It's like, if you're a first-round pick in the NFL, a first-round pick, you better be a superstar or you're going to be calling games for a network. It's one or the other. Oh, bounce around the league and be a legitimate backup that could be suitable? Oh, no. It's silly. Why would we do that when we have a guy from Shepherd that can do that? Oh, we got a couple of guys you've never even heard of. They'll be just fine. Don't worry about it. We got media guides to give you the background of all these kids. But people you have heard of that you've been watching in college on every single Saturday, competing for the rankings and being part of the playoff and maybe winning a conference championship. No. You'll enjoy their vocal talent when they're calling games around the NFL or college football. That's where we're at now. It's kind of nuts when you think about it, right? Because Bryce Young, for example, might be a failure. He might be good. He might overcome this rookie stuff and actually be decent. But he might be a failure. But what's more likely for Bryce Young 5 years from now? That he's not on any NFL team and taking a job as an analyst or a coach or something like that? Or just being good enough, a guy that knows the league, can help you out, can be a backup? Our backups are seriously people that we have no idea who they are.
See, I wanted to mention the team in your hood real quick, right?
Right.
Because you actually, I mean, now we know that Will Levis is has he been given the starting job?
Not until, they haven't made the decision.
They haven't made it official,
Tannehill,
right?
Is healthy, but while he's out, yes.
But you have Malik Willis, a name that we have heard before, who is just going to waste away.
Right.
It plays exactly what you're talking about, as opposed to a Clayton Tune or a Tyson Bagent who are starters in the NFL.
Yeah. And this is one of the reasons Josh Dobbs' story is amazing, because he's good enough that teams around the league are like, that guy's decent.
Yeah.
That guy's good enough.
He's the new Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right. He can patch a hole. Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, look, but here's the thing. Because Dobbs got there late, they had to go with a guy named Jaren Hall as a starting quarterback.
Now, where is he from?
Right? I have zero idea. Tommy DeVito was the quarterback for the Giants. Right? Like, and listen, before you give me the argument, oh, well, they're cheaper than, you know, these former first-round picks that are not in the league anymore. I get it. Like, if you're a former first-round pick and you've been regulated to a backup, you're probably going to command a lot more money than a Tommy DeVito. So I do understand that. But at the same time, it is amazing to me that we're not even peppering this league with backup quarterbacks that are familiar to us. They are literally guys no one has ever seen play before, ever. And they're backup quarterbacks, and they are, like we joke about Easton Stick. Like, who are these people? That's what the league is right now, giving us names as backups. Why isn't a backup, why isn't it Patrick Mahomes and the backup is, you know, some guy that played at North Carolina, or somebody that played at, you know, Georgia, or
a bigger school.
Like, why isn't Stetson Bennett like a legit backup? Yeah. I know he's hurt.
So Jaren Hall, real quick, is from BYU.
Right. Whatever.
Joshua Dobbs most likely to be next week's starter.
Right.
Because he's hurt, Nick Mullins is on IR, and Kirk Cousins is on IR.
Find any team, look up their backup quarterback, and I guarantee you probably never heard of them. You're either a superstar or you're a media guide entry.